We believe that the recent instances of attempted acts of terrorism within the homeland reflect a shift in tactics by al-Qaeda, that they have had less time and space to plot, to train, to operate in their safe havens, in large part because of the increased pressure they're facing in places like the border area of Pakistan and Afghanistan. So what they've done is shifted to the tactic of trying to inspire people who they may not even be in direct contact with to conduct terrorist attacks. So our efforts do recognize that connection, and they recognize this shift in tactic by al-Qaeda.
What's your view on people who seek out groups like al-Qaeda or the Taliban, people who may be here in the states themselves? We, in the past, referred to them as sleepers, people who are disenfranchised, who may actually reach out to them.
Well, again, when insofar as individuals are in touch with foreign terrorist organizations, and we've seen in some of these recent instances, not just efforts to reach out to them, but literally efforts to travel to those regions, to basically come into contact with foreign terrorist organizations like al-Qaeda. When individuals start to engage in that kind of behavior, they prevent opportunities for us to detect their actions, and they basically become more vulnerable. For instance, we saw the five men from Northern Virginia who went through this radicalization process, traveled to Pakistan to try to make contact with people, extremists in Pakistan, who could facilitate their ability to conduct attacks. And they were apprehended in cooperation with Pakistani authorities. So I think that as soon as somebody starts to come into contact with al-Qaeda, they make themselves vulnerable to the efforts that we have in place to, again, monitor terrorist activity around the world. There's then this separate question, though, and more difficult one, of how do you prevent individuals from being radicalized in the first instance? Because, and that, there's no capability that the government could have, right, to know what's inside someone's head, to know the process that they're going through that leads them to try to get in touch with, again, a terrorist organization. So there, I think the best asset that the United States has is strong, resilient, and successful communities that are trying to ensure that individuals within those communities don't, again, reach a place of such, again, intense radicalization that they feel like they need to conduct terrorist attacks against the United States.
Were there any developments that took place Times Square related or Zazi related that you saw that required you to make any changes in your strategy as you were putting it together over time?
Yeah, I'd just say that we have seen we've observed over the course of the last several months, if not, and in some instances it the last couple of years, we've seen al-Qaeda specific instances of individuals who, again, were not in the traditional vein of somebody who was from the region, traveled to an al-Qaeda training camp, spent a lot of time there, learned tradecraft, and came here to conduct attacks, but rather individuals who were in the United States and who had kind of gone through a process of radicalization that led them to try to conduct attacks. But what we'd also seen just as significantly is al-Qaeda, through its messages, through its tapes, audio tapes, videotapes, start calling upon people to do this. So they signaled very clearly that this was a tactic that they were going to begin to undertake. And again, we believe that they've shifted to this tactic in large part because they don't have the kind of operational space that they used to have, the kind of safe havens where they could train and plot and operate. So they need to find new ways to try to inspire others to conduct attacks on their behalf. So insofar as the strategy was developed throughout the last several months, this has certainly been an issue that we've been watching very carefully, and it's reflected in actions that our government's taking to better address this challenge, and it's reflected in the strategy as well.
Has the role of the military changed when it comes to its importance in the national security strategy, and to what degree and how?
Yeah, I think that over time, the role of the military has certainly remained fundamental. And one of the things that's constant is, from previous administrations of many years, is that we believe that America has to maintain kind of an unmatched military advantage. We have unique military capabilities that protect our security, but just as important, they project power to be able to protect our allies around the world.
Ben Rhodes is a Deputy National Security Advisor for Strategic Communications. J.G. Green, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.